and welcome to another edition of Chatting with Ingram. Now, today we're going to get into a very interesting subject. It's just hit the press this week about the Israeli company NSO and their Pegasus software targeting journalists and politicians and those that may disagree with various government lines and everything else. And it's billed as a military-grade piece of spyware. Well, in my mind, military-grade means it's overly expensive and it doesn't work. But it's something that highlights a whole issue to do with mobile device or device security. And we're very fortunate to have a good panel of speakers with us today. And I'll allow them to introduce themselves. And we'll start off with Ian.
Hey, everyone. I'm Ian Thornton Trump, also known as Fat Hobbit Online. I'm the CISO for Cyjax, and I have great interest in today's topic and some background to share.
Andy?
Hi, Andy Robinson, CEO of DataShield. We are the lucky repository for some great technology from Zimperium and other organizations that are helping fight the new epidemic of mobile threat defense, et cetera, and managing that. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, and finally, you mentioned Zimperium, so we've got Ash.
Good morning, and thank you very much, Phil. So Ash Purcell here, General Manager for Zimperium across Europe, and have the pleasure to specialise in the world of mobile device security.
So before we get into the details of NSO and Pegasus and all the rest of Ash, you specialise in providing solutions out for mobile device security. How well understood is the device security market and the potential threats that there are to it?
It's quite a broad question and an interesting question. So I think firstly, you've got to just deal with the word mobile device. That's sort of one element. When we say mobile device, most of us think phones. It's got a little bit further than that. It's phones, it's tablets, it's Chromebooks. It's across iOS devices, Android devices, and probably going into the future, not too far in the future either, is sort of extending that into IoT devices, being things like POS terminals that you might be using your credit cards on when you get the right to go to a restaurant and eat again. So, you know, that's one element is actually one of the devices we're talking about. And the other element is sort of how, you know, coming back to your question, sort of how real is the threat out there? And you know, as you clearly mentioned there with the announcement today in the media around the Pegasus variant sort of re-emerging and adjusting itself to the big wide world again, the threat is very much real and very much out there, and has been for many, many, many years. It's just that it's recently hitting the media now.
And Ian, you and Cyjax specialise in the threat intelligence side of things. What are you seeing from the mobile device threat side of things? And is it expanding into what effectively we're calling as endpoints if we're getting into IoT devices?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess, you know, where I go with this is the worldwide movement towards what is seen as the solution to securing credentials, which is multi-factor authentication. So there's been a pivot in cybersecurity attacks by sophisticated actors in compromising the mobile device in order to get access to the one-time passwords or into an application that relies on the security of the particular device. So for instance, you know, if you try to access a banking information via the web, there's a number of security steps that are put in the way. If you can gain access to a handheld device, you may not have to provide a passcode or a one-time password to access, you know, sensitive information. So I think what I've seen is the cybersecurity, cyber criminal groups have definitely seen the opportunity space of mobile devices with vulnerabilities and with applications that have vulnerabilities as well.
And do you think that people realize the computing power that they're carrying in their hands these days with mobile devices, and therefore the potential for them to compromise so much more? Yeah, when you had your Nokia 3310, there was very little chance of people getting access to your IP, your company database, and everything else. However, it's only been a few years since then. And do you think the wider security market, both from an understanding perspective and a tech perspective, have caught up with the potential threats?
Yeah, I would. I'll sort of answer it in two parts. So the first part being, there's a tremendous amount of computing power and applications and sensitive data being processed by handhelds. And you're 100% right that what we've done in terms of the applications is we've broadened the attack surface tremendously as a result of that. I would say the additive, or even the making it a bad situation worse, is the scrutiny that applications fall under when they're introduced into the app stores has been lackluster at best. And because it's a monetized situation, extra scrutiny on the security permissions required or the access to sensitive information of the phone is traded off for getting the app to sell as many copies of it as possible on the store, and so in a way we've created this proverbial snake that eats its own tail. And this is why folks that are coming into the marketplace to try and secure handheld devices and manage them and keep them up to date and lower the overall attack surface is badly needed, because it seems now that our mobile devices are a gateway and a poorly secured gateway at that into the applications that we rely on for day-to-day activities.
Now, Andy, Ash, how is it that you get in and look at these multiple threats and start to secure them?
Sure. Let me just, I'll come to that in a moment. Just let me just touch a little bit further on what your original ask there was about the sort of the power of these devices. Power of the devices is one thing. The other two elements that have fundamentally changed over the last handful of years that sort of led to this epidemic of cybersecurity issues across mobile devices is, yes, power's increased on these devices, the processing power, but the data costs have absolutely fallen and hit the floor. And the third element was cloud computing. Everything was suddenly available on the cloud. You added these three elements together over the last, 5 years or so, 3 to 5 years, and suddenly you've ended up with your entire office in the palm of your hand. Yeah, and as was just mentioned there, the access to such sensitive data in from the palm of your hand as well, but without any real thought or process for many, many organizations about how those devices are secured. And it's not only about how they're secured, but it's about not having any visibility on what's going on these devices. If you actually think about it, generally speaking, if you look down at your desk right now, you've probably got a tablet of some description, a mobile phone of some description, and a laptop or PC, right? Yeah, exactly. So three devices, two-thirds of your devices are probably not sending any information back to your SOC or your SIM platform, and that's your tablet and your mobile phone. Why, as a business, have we chosen to just ignore two-thirds of our endpoint estate? That's the question, really, people need to ask themselves first, because by ignoring it, what we're not seeing is the threat data off there. If we're not seeing the threat data on there, we may as well be burying our head in the sand, because trust me, it's happening. It's happening every single day. I mean, we as an organization, as Imperium, have 3,000 plus medium to enterprise customers. I would be hard pushed to find one that hasn't seen some sort of threat on their mobile devices. But prior to deploying anything, they saw nothing. So just by not monitoring doesn't mean it's not happening. that's one of the key messages that people need to sort of understand in looking and the thought around protecting mobile devices.
Yeah, and Ian, you're one of the big threats that's come out, and it's a spectacular one. Creating the sensationalism is this Pegasus threat from the Israeli company NSO. Can you tell the listeners a little bit more about that?
Sure. So NSO has been vendors of misery for quite some time, and they tend to operate in the shadows, selling their surveillance software globally to some what we would call pretty distasteful regimes. It's actually kind of amazing to me that despite their involvement with Washington Post journalists, Khashoggi, I think is how Khashoggi. You say his last name.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Their software was implicated in tracking him, ultimately to the ambush and his killing. Mm-hmm. This is the sort of company that you're dealing with. The United Kingdom has taken some action against them. They used to make a regular appearance in the cybersecurity community, with various advertising of mm-hmm. their products and wares. And I believe they've been quietly told they're no longer welcome. I think, though, you know, on the opposite side of the fence, in terms of like, if you need elevated sort of, I would say, cybersecurity, operational security capabilities, the handheld device that you have, which is, you know, always on, always tracking you, potentially even remotely recording conversations, is an attack surface that I agree with Ash in that it hasn't really been examined and addressed with a sense of urgency the way we think about, you know, the Windows or Mac OS platforms.
No, the other thing that ties in with that is, you know, today we've at the same time had the press reporting that the UK and the US government have formally accused China of being heavily involved in the cyber attacks. Now, mobile devices, by their very nature, are this devices that businessmen and businesswomen take with them whenever they're traveling the world to different trade events and to different countries and all the rest of it. Given what you've said about the Pegasus software and NSO and what you've said about us not quite understanding the threat that's out there and the warnings that there are about China and Russia, how concerned should we be if we take devices with us on business trips?
We should be very concerned, Philip, to say the least. We've witnessed, without doubt, in many organisations with business trip users, both private and public sector, breaches occurring or attempted breaches, should I say, occurring, particularly through Wi-Fi attacks. On devices as they're connecting, naturally connecting to Wi-Fis that are out there, but however, they appear to be hostile. And I think what we have to do as well is not just point the finger of blame to China and Russia. This is happening everywhere. Yeah. I could point out a map of 200-300 different hostile Wi-Fi networks just scattered around Westminster, Victoria and such, around London, right? So where they're coming from, what organisations are dropping them there, now that's a whole different conversation, but certainly it's not a problem just by visiting China or Russia. It's a problem that's across the board.
And Andy, you know, as you're going out and pushing out some of the solutions on behalf of Ash and the rest of the team, what sort of feedback are you picking up from people out? Do they have a real understanding? Is there a desire to secure our mobile devices, or is there generally a void there that needs to be filled?
Philip, there's a huge void there. And as Ash was alluding to before, this is all about awareness. People don't see the problems because they're not monitoring the problems. And if you can't see them and you're not monitoring them, you have no problem. You're living in a cave. I mean, ultimately, there's also a perception that MDM is security. Mobile device management manages the device. It does not secure the device. It may enforce a strong password, 6-digit PIN on an iPhone. It may insist that you use a VPN, but there's a whole world of things it doesn't do. So I think there's a misunderstanding of what MDM does. And one of the journeys we're on with Zimperium is to actually show people there is a difference. But the most important thing here, you know, is awareness. You know, mobile risks are real. The analysts, like Gartner, recommend mobile threat defense. Security best practices now include mobile threat defense. Government guidelines and guidance suggest that this is a good area. You're passionate, Ian, I know, and Philip, about mobile threat defense. But look at what CISO priorities are there to protect. Corporate email, corporate apps, ransomware, executive locations, entry point to a network, username and password. Well, we're doing all this in a traditional Wintel environment, but most people aren't even thinking about it when it comes to modern operating systems mobile threat. It's a huge, huge problem, and this is all about awareness.
Just yeah. to, if you don't mind, just for me to add a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
One area we just touched on there was sort of CISO's priorities. An area that Ian mentioned previously was about two-factor authentication. Yep. Now, zero trust is a huge priority for organizations. Yeah. And two-factor authentication is quite often the linchpin to that zero trust route, that zero trust journey we take. And that zero trust journey with two-factor authentication, 9 times out of 10, will start on the mobile device. With a 2FA product on your mobile device that's issuing you a secure password, a secure PIN number to move on to the next step. Now, if that device is breached, A, how do you know, unless you're monitoring? And B, if it is breached, why would you even start a zero trust process from that mobile phone? And by the way, that's not just about corporate access to devices. That's also about access to your banking application that you're using on your phone, your shopping application that you're using on your phone. The process of you authenticating yourself is starting on that mobile phone, be it from a two-factor authentication product, to be it from a text-based verification process, or even when you're logged out quite simply from your email account, be it Gmail, Microsoft, whatever it may be. Yep, you get sent a 2FA text number from via text message to your phone to authenticate. So the base principle of not monitoring the device security, the network security, the application security, and the phishing capability on these devices, those four elements, really puts you a sort of a negative stance when starting your security process from that device. That's one very important thing I think people need to understand.
So go on, Ian. How do attackers get into your device? Because, you know, I've got an Apple iPhone. It's secure. It's Apple. Everyone knows that.
Okay, so there's two ways. I mean, obviously, it's when there's a vulnerability that can be remote code exploited on the actual device itself against an operating system or a potential application. So what frequently happens is it's a phishing email or a phishing text. You click on it, and through some cyber criminal awesomeness, they're able to install some sort of Trojan or some sort of persistent connection. That is probably the most common. It's a mirror of the type of attack that we see on most endpoints that, you know, starts with a phishing email. It's pretty rare that I've seen a remote code execution against a mobile device, but it does exist, especially in some of the older Android versions. And one of the challenges that we have, I think, industry-wide is in those old devices, you have a number of vulnerabilities that are already proof of concept, already exist in something like, you know, Metasploit. So it's very easy for the attack to be conducted. The other piece of this is, you know, the man in the middle types of attacks, which are more sophisticated, that require, you know, a fake Wi-Fi access point to do some sort of interception, some sort of cryptography downgrade type of attack in order to get at sensitive data that might be available on the wire. So it's a very similar attack surface, but I think one of the things that is poignant to me is that the idea that we have to install some sort of additional security on top of a device, you know, that is the most secure operating system ever, it causes a little bit of anxiety for organizations because they're afraid that, you know, it's going to reduce battery life, it's going to interfere with other, you know, line of business applications, it's going to restrict the users from, you know, enjoying their phone if, in fact, they are asked to use their personal device for work functions. So I agree with, you know, Ash and Andy on the idea that there's this huge education gap out there. There are a bunch of mythology, I think, from 3 or 4 years ago before the technology, do you manage and secure remote devices, has really become robust. And again, it's an attack surface that, you know, is no one's paying attention. I mean, if a server starts talking to Finland and we don't have any customers in Finland, there are a lot of really great devices to point that out and flag that up to you. But in the mobile space, a compromised device is a difficult technical investigation to conduct. And, you know, you need things like burp suite and you need things like proxy and whatnot to even detect that there's some covert communication going on the device. So it's a real challenge, I think. And it's one that, you know, I think will receive a lot more attention in the future.
So Ian, you and Sajax are great at educating us about the wider threat and everything else. Ash, from a solution perspective, you know, Ian highlighted some of the pieces there. What is it that Zimperium provides that's different to what else is out in the market, and how does that help secure devices?
Sure. So I think what Ian touched on there was a couple of elements that are hugely important, which was the security around phishing, the security around network-based attacks through man-in-the-middle and such. Those are two hugely important elements. And then, you know, further to that, it's the device-level compromises we spoke about earlier. And that may be things such as breaking out of sandboxes, system tampering, elevations of privileges, those type of attacks. And then the final element really is the application level attack. So what applications are people downloading on their phone? Are they hostile or they're not hostile? Just because they came from an official store doesn't necessarily mean they're clean. And certainly if they've come from a third party store, they're more than likely not going to be. So it's about user behavior as well. But before we get on to sort of the technology, the other element is, so A is looking after those sort of four key areas: device, network, application, and phishing. The other element, which is hugely important, which really can't go unnoticed, is the privacy of the user. Yeah. Now, a mobile phone is, even if it's given to you by your organization as a corporate device, is hugely personal to you compared to your laptop, hugely personal. And people don't want to feel like their privacy is being invaded by applying security technologies to these devices, be it BYOD or corporate devices. So businesses sort of feel like they're caught in a catch-22 situation that they really need to get themselves out of. So what we've done as an organization is develop a technology that escapes the need for proxy-based architectures, escapes the need for sandboxing-based architectures out in the cloud, but does all the detection on the device in real time without invading the user's privacy whatsoever, minimally impacting the battery life of the device and causing little to no overhead on data consumption and such. And we do that through using machine learning-based technology that's running on the device that understands the status of the operating system, understands the behavior of the network it's on. And that's why Pegasus is a great example of one. Now, we all know that originally came out 3, 4, 5 years ago, or however long ago it was. Now, we as an organization, did we discover Pegasus? No. Did we block Pegasus soon as it came out as a zero day? Absolutely. Why? Because we don't look for malware. We look for the effects malware has on a device. Yeah. Which is why it's not just about protecting on those Wi-Fi networks or hostile applications, but it's also about the ability to detect against zero days, obviously before they're out there while they're out there in the wild, before they're sort of released. And we've had huge success, and as said, Pegasus is one of those where we don't need to announce that we've discovered X, because we're blocking them before they're even known as Pegasus. Yeah.
Well, that's a fascinating way of doing it. So instead of trying to identify the threat vector and mitigate the threat vector itself, what you're doing is you're mitigating all threat vectors from exfiltrating the data and looking at at your security from a different perspective, looking at what's critical on your device, i.e. your data, protecting that against anything that's coming in rather than targeting specific threats. Ian, do you think that's the right way that things should be done in the future?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting way because, you know, obviously you can apply machine learning and AI models to large data sets. And then when you compare that to sort of known IPs that belong to C2 infrastructure or that are that have suspicious reputations, shall we say they belong to certain organizations, infrastructures that are known sort of safe haven for cyber criminals. I think that the technology is valuable on two levels. The first is obviously in a very proactive sense, but also it's in a very reactive digital forensics investigation sense so that you can determine perhaps where the patient zero was in terms of the data breach or attempted data breach. And what I'm finding increasingly is there's two types of companies. There's a company that reports a data breach and has a very firm idea of how things happened. You know, Colonial Pipeline is applauded for being very transparent about, you know, they found a neglected VPN service that had valid credentials, wasn't protected by multi-factor authentication. That's the most likely route in that the bad guys took. And they had the telemetry within their own organization to you know, suggest that that was the most likely way that the bad guys got in. Conversely, there are companies that have basically shrugged their shoulders and said, could have been a zero day, could have been a brute force attack, you know, could have been, you know, a compromised credentials. We don't know. And, you know, you look at those two companies, two very different, you know, situations, and you go, well, which is the one I want to do business with? You know, even in a post-breach scenario, I think, you know, you can have the, I tried security and the bad guys got in anyways, but if you just kind of don't even have the basics in place, you know, I got to say, you've got a long ways to go before your network can be treated as, you know, having any sort of hygiene to it. So I think on the maturity scale, you know, I see this as being very important as people have moved more to mobile platforms for banking, for conducting transactions online. I think, and perhaps Ash can back me up on this, but I think 40% or more of the traffic hitting the large websites today is on the mobile platform, which to me is like a no-brainer that if that's the amount of traffic that's being generated by those assets, they deserve some protection, telemetry, and monitoring as well.
Yeah, and Ash, I think you'd agree it's only going to get bigger than the 40%.
I think it already is. I think it's actually closer to about 60% at the moment. Yeah, but as we know, statistics come out differently from different organisations. We'll probably agree on the 50% at this stage. But I think, you know, one area that Ian's touched on there, which is hugely important, I mean, the majority of the course so far, we've been speaking about sort of what I would classify as device-level security, the actual mobile phone in your hand or mobile tablet in your hand and protecting that. The other aspect is actually for the organizations that are building those applications that are running on those devices, you know, how are they, A, making sure they build them securely, B, how are they making sure they're running securely in the field? So between us three on the call here, we'll probably have a bank account that's got a mobile application that's running on our mobile device. What's the bank doing about installing technology in that mobile application? So while it's running in real time in the field, there is, it knows, that application knows it's running on a device that hasn't been breached. I was looking at some figures just the other day, and apparently between 2019 and 2020, mobile banking fraud, this is mobile banking fraud from mobile devices, went up from 15 million to 21 million within 1 year. So as a percentage increase, it's phenomenally high. Now, that was direct fraud loss from mobile phones. So the number of devices we're seeing out there that are breached is phenomenally high. Yeah. Without a doubt. And the thing is, there's no really hiding it, because you mentioned earlier about how the manufacturers of these devices are obviously releasing patches and all the rest of it. Yeah. Now, if you go back 4 years ago, 5 years ago, when you got a mobile phone update on your, you know, be it your iPhone or your Android, you got super excited because you got a new technology, you know, you got biometrics, you got facial recognition, whatever the hell it was. And we're all really excited about it. Now, ask yourself, how often do you get updates now and do you get excited about them? No, because they're patches. What are patches doing? They're fixing holes. They're fixing vulnerabilities. So these organizations can't say their devices are fundamentally safe when they're patching them on a weekly or bi-weekly basis. Yeah. You know? So if there isn't a hole, what you fix? That's a question you've got to ask.
Well, exactly. And I think that's almost a good lesson for us to finish on. You have all of those that are listening out there, you are a beta tester for the software providers, whether it be through your mobile phone or whether it be through all of the apps that you've got on your mobile phone. And those patches mean that they're plugging vulnerabilities. So you've been vulnerable the whole time that patch hasn't been there. And they are getting exploited more and more and more. So it's critical that we start to take mobile devices security much more seriously and look at it, especially as the processing power gets bigger, the ability to hold our data that I would class as, from a military perspective, your key terrain or your vital ground, in a position that if you lose it, you could lose your business. So on that note, Ian, great to talk to you and you get the insights from a Sajax threat perspective, and Ash, from a solution to making sure that you are not going to be compromised, from a Zimperium perspective, great to talk to you as well.
Thank you very much, Philip.
Thanks, Phil.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you've heard, please feel free to share, and we look forward to joining you next time.